This is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. On today's program, we're going to examine very, very important current events in the light or the lens of Bible prophecy or biblical worldview. Specifically, the role of strange new diseases that have been rising up around the world for the last 50 years or so. And these are diseases that have no previous genetic history. So, for example, the overwhelming percentage of things like bacteria, diseases, viruses, etc., they have a genetic DNA history. They can be traced back sometimes thousands and thousands of years ago or more. I gave you the case in point of the sexually transmitted disease syphilis, and how you can go back to Europe before the French Revolution, during the French Revolution, that general time period, and beforehand. And you will find in the skeletal remains of dead bodies, researchers have found the evidence of syphilis. Many people died of syphilis. They were sexually promiscuous, and syphilis was one of the primary sexually transmitted diseases. And as I understand it, there were really no cures for syphilis. I mean, there probably were some cures, homeopathic nutritional cures or whatever. But certain forms of silver, I've heard, cured syphilis or potentially can cure syphilis. And so what they found is in the skeletal remains of many of the people in the French Revolution, and we have to remember the French Revolution was all about throwing off the rules and laws and commandments of God. The French Revolution was a copy of the American Revolution. And the French Revolution occurred just a few short years after the American Revolution. The French Revolution was highly influenced by the American Revolution. But as I've said on this program, the Paul McGuire Report, really countless times, the ideas inside the American Revolution are totally unique in human history. And that has to be understood. That's not opinion, that's a fact. And they're totally unique in human history is because when you look at our legal documents like the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, which the normal average child used to read in the public school, students and adults used to read throughout the school system, the Declaration of Independence. It's not that long. The Bill of Rights, what your rights are. And the other reason for our freedoms, like freedom of the press and freedom of religion and freedom of speech, so on and so forth. So you could ask the average American, both in rural places and in cities, even young preteens or whatever, ask them what their rights were. They could recite to you by memory all of their freedoms and rights. They could recite to you by memory the fact that the Creator, capital C, gave us, the people of the U.S., certain inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They knew this by memory, and they also knew what it meant. What it meant was these rights that our government is designed to protect, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, our guiding philosophy in America, the foundation upon which we built our laws, all flows directly into the Old Testament and the New Testament, or a biblical worldview. So it says that the inalienable rights given to us, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, were given to us by the Creator, capital C, or God, And what the founding fathers were saying in the Declaration of Independence is this, and this is why America is exceptional. The founding fathers were saying, it is only God, the Creator, capital C, who has the power to give men and women rights like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Only God has the power to grant or give those rights. And it is only God who has the power and authority to take away those rights. In other words, they were declaring, in opposition to every other governmental system on planet Earth, including the ones that were going to come in the future, like the French Revolution, our founding fathers were openly declaring this fact. It is not humans or human governments that give you your freedoms. You are born, you were born to be a free man or woman, and certain rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they were granted to you by the Supreme Being, the God of the Bible. And it is only God who can grant those rights. And no man, no man-made institution like government or human laws have the right to take away or attempt to take away the rights that only God has given. Now that's no small thing. This is why America is different than every other nation on planet Earth. Even with all of our problems, with all of our failures, American exceptionalism is not a hype word. It's true. We have to understand the nitty-gritty here. We have been infiltrated in America by enemies hidden inside a Trojan horse. And most of you know what a Trojan horse is. And for the few of you that may not know, I'll quickly explain it. In ancient military battlefields, and even today, when there was a series of very important battles, and I can't remember which empire, whether it was Roman, I think it was either the Greek or Roman Empire. And so the people were very powerful. Let's just call it the empire, but it was either the Grecian Empire or the Roman Empire. And they were very powerful, and they had massive walls and gates and massive heavily armed armies to protect the sovereignty of their empires from invaders and people that would try to break through the walls and enslave their people. And what the enemy did, and I have the historical legacy mixed up here, so I apologize to you. I just opened a couple of file cabinets in my brain and realized that I probably should re-present it to you, but I want to get to the more important point. And the more important point is simply this. This method of warfare where soldiers that are armed will get through the gates or go through the walls of an empire, not by coming out in the open and blowing trumpets and waving flags and flashing swords or guns. The way it is often most effective to go through the walls or the barricades of a heavily protected city or empire or whatever is to use a Trojan horse. Now, the Trojan horse was like a giant artificial horse. And the Trojan horse was like a giant artificial horse statue that was mounted on a platform that was somewhat like a wagon and it had wheels. And either men would pull the Trojan horse forward on wheels or men and horses. And they were approaching the walls of a fortified city. And they told the king that they were going to present to the king a gift of these magnificently carved horses. So I'm going to guess here and assume that because it was called the Trojan forces, that this was developed in the ancient city of Troy. So the artists of Troy built these magnificent-looking statues, thus Trojan horses, and they were to be given as a gift, and because they were spectacular. But the real purpose of the Trojan horses was not to be a work of art or like a sculpture. The real purpose of the Trojan horses was it was large enough in its interior to carry a whole lot of soldiers who were heavily armed secretly. Now, I don't know what the number of soldiers, but each Trojan horse was able to sneak in a whole lot of highly trained soldiers, highly armed soldiers. And the king gladly had his soldiers open the gates wide open to receive this wonderful gift, because they could see how beautiful these Trojan horses were. And so the soldiers protecting the king, the armies protecting the king, dropped their guard and just without question opened up the gates to their city, the fortified gates to their city, to receive this wonderful gift of many, many Trojan horses. Well, this was a military strategy. I don't know how long after they welcomed in the Trojan horses. My guess would be as it turned towards dark. But then there were hundreds, if not thousands, of highly trained, highly armed soldiers hiding inside these Trojan horses. And when the king and his armies weren't looking, they secretly escaped out of these Trojan horses, which were now inside the gates of the city and the empire. And then the soldiers that were hidden inside the Trojan horses attacked and destroyed and immobilized the king's army. They made the king captive, and they were able to, in a military strategy, conquer this city and conquer the empire and conquer the king, which they normally couldn't have done because they didn't have the number of soldiers, the armament they needed. In other words, this king had a far more powerful army than the people who attacked it. So there was no way possible that they were supposed to win this military battle, except they had this ingenious strategy that had never been used in this way before, which was to sneak their soldiers inside the gates of this fortified city using Trojan horses. This military strategy that relied on deception and hiding the soldiers inside the Trojan horses caught the prince and his generals and his armies by surprise, and it allowed these people to conquer the king in this empire. And this is known as a Trojan horse, and it's a strategy that has been imitated in military, police, law enforcement circles for thousands and thousands of years. Not just actual horse statues that hide, you know, soldiers or whatever. There are so many variations of the Trojan horse strategy where the gift can be all kinds of gifts. It can be a giant float in a parade like the Rose Bowl. It could be a gift of, you know, 40 super futuristic tanks to some nation. Okay, I'm speaking hypothetically, and yet the tanks are filled with soldiers who have the ammunition and a battle plan, and so this enemy's territory, even though it seems naive and stupid, opens the door to let the gift of these tanks in. So obviously they'd probably use a group of people that were allies to this enemy, or of the same group, you know, like ISIS or whatever. So it's a variation of the Trojan horse strategy. The Trojan horse strategy is you come bringing some kind of very large gift, or you come bringing something very, very large that a ruler wants, and it can be done through many plays on a chessboard. The end result is you sneak in your army and you use it as a ploy to get behind the gates and the barriers and the defense mechanisms. That's what a Trojan horse strategy is. So what we have to understand is that we live in a time where this strategy was used, and it was used in the founding of the United States of America. What happened was that when you go back thousands and thousands of years to the Trojan horse strategy, and you bring it up to the founding of America and American exceptionalism, we have all of our freedoms because it is recognized by our founding fathers that our freedoms come from God, not from man, not from human government. Therefore, human government is not allowed to take away the freedoms that only God can give. And so when you read our Bill of Rights, the difference between, let's say, France and EU nations and the United Nations, they have copied somewhat our Bill of Rights and our Constitution. So at first glance, you think, well, gee, the EU and the UN and all these other nations are offering a very similar deal as the US. But no, not at all. When you look closely, you see the loopholes in the EU and the UN and all these other nations. With the United States of America, you're given freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, the right to bear arms, and on and on and on and on. But it's a Bill of Rights that never ends. It clearly warns in other documents that the government can't wake up someday, or the people of America can't wake up someday and just arbitrarily decide to steal away all your rights and take away from you freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, so on and so forth. That can't happen because those rights are not anchored in the whims of a human government. But when you compare the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights with the French Revolution, the Communist Revolution in Russia, the Communist Revolution in Cuba and China, the Nationalist Socialist Revolution, if you will, in Nazi Germany, and on and on and on, and the UN and the EU, you see that they appear to give away all these rights, just like the U.S. does. But then when you read the fine print of their governmental documents, it essentially says that at any time the government or the heads of the government or the people of that nation or whatever, they have the right to change their mind, and they have they gave themselves the right to not only change their mind, but take away from the people any of the rights that they were given, such as freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and all the other freedoms. So the rights don't mean a hill of beans in all the nations on planet Earth. They don't mean anything because they're not backed up by anything. Anytime the EU government or the United Nations global government or a communist government or a national socialist government, anytime these governments change their mind and want to take away your rights, they have the full right to do so. Why? Because it says it in their founding documents. It actually says that. I've read the EU document. I've read the United Nations document. And they have what's called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I quote it and talk about it in many of my books, especially Conquering the Matrix and The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. I write down what the European Union and UN Constitution promised the people. And then you see when you go down the list, because it's numbered, it's like number 1 for 48, whatever. When you go down the list, after they give you the freedoms, then they insert contradictory statements like, if the government of the EU or the UN changes its mind or whatever, or the people of the EU or the UN change their mind, that this government reserves the right to take away the rights that you were given. So, in other words, those rights don't mean anything because anytime the government wants to, they have the right to take them away. And then it gets, you read the rest of the fine print, and it's mind-blowing, because it says, if you publicly come out and speak against or criticize the EU or the UN in any way, if you criticize, you know, the rights and how tenuous they are, if you criticize the efficiency of these governments like the UN and the EU, it says that these globalist governments have the right to punish you for your criticism, and even retroactively, they can go back in time. And they can take away all of your money, part of your money. They can take away your retirement. They can strip you of your health care. They can take away your apartment or condo or home. They can take away anything you have. And then they can punish you for every year they determined you were in violation, even though when you were first speaking, it wasn't a violation. And then they have the right to throw you in jail. And you can't do anything really to appeal it. And you could be in jail for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So what's the bottom line here? The bottom line is, when you read the fine print of all these so-called copies of the American Revolution, you find out that these other countries with their revolutions, they don't guarantee any real freedom. They're imposters. And we need to always remember that, because socialism, which always becomes communism and Marxism, national socialism, globalism, they all grow from these UN, EU documents. And ultimately, how it all took off was, America was successful in its revolution. But remember, America's revolution was based on biblical Christian principles, which is the same thing as saying America's revolution was based on a biblical worldview. That's why it's essential to have a biblical worldview. When France tried to copy our revolution, they did it, but they didn't want God. So they didn't build the foundation of their revolution, their government, their system. They refused to build it upon the reality of God and God's word. Instead, they built it upon what they thought was the reality of human logic, human willpower, and human reason, and what human beings think. And that, and so every communist revolution, every other revolution, Cuba, National Socialism, every other so-called copy, if you will, of the American Revolution, they all have the same fatal flaw. The rights of the people are not backed up by God and God's law. The rights of the people are only backed up by a human government and the whims of a human government. So what happened in the French Revolution, which occurred shortly after the American Revolution, was because they did not believe in biblical values, they didn't believe in God, their whole revolution was based on humanism, the belief that man is becoming a god. They rejected God's commandments and laws, and as long as it feels good, do it. And so, because the French Revolution was not founded on a biblical worldview, but a humanistic worldview, it ended up with mass guillotine of people in the streets of Paris. I was standing there shooting some video on the very spot where they lined up the guillotines. The French revolutionaries, you know, and they chopped the heads off, you know, tens of thousands of people in the streets of Paris. And what was interesting, as I was talking into the camera. I had a Frenchman with me who was a Christian, and he informed me on things that were very important. And he showed me that on the exact same spot that the people were being guillotined by the French revolutionaries and having their heads chopped off, that if you looked straight through the line where the guillotines were, you could see a sculpture of the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. Okay? And then if you looked in the other direction, you could see this another pyramid sculpture of the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. And in this place where so many people had their heads chopped off, there were all these occultic symbols, such as the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. There were numerous occultic symbols. So what this told me is that even though the French revolutionaries and philosophers said they were atheists and they were humanistic, that was deceptive. Secretly, they were occultists and Freemasons and members of secret occult societies. And when in their French Revolution they had mass beheadings, the mass beheadings in the streets of Paris had a dual function. One was, it was a way the French revolutionaries could get rid of their enemies. But the other reason for the mass beheadings and the chopping off of tens of thousands of heads and the spilling of blood in the streets of Paris is it offered the secret occult societies that were behind the French Revolution, it offered them an opportunity to perform the satanic ritual of a mass blood human sacrifice, because the energizing forces behind the French Revolution and many of these other revolutions was not just secular humanist as they pretended. It was satanic in nature. Now, I explain that in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. And so the French Revolution, the Communist Revolution imitated it. Socialist revolutions imitated it. It was imitated everywhere, but it contained a fatal flaw. It only believed in man's logic, man's reason, and man's government. Also, in all these nations like France and Russia and Cuba and so on and so forth, there's something very, very interesting. Not only can the government change its mind at any time, it's very interesting to notice that one of the primary features of the American Revolution and our form of government is our founding fathers insisted that the American people were given their Second Amendment rights, which is, as you know, the right to bear arms. That was central, according to the founding fathers. Now, it's interesting that Newt Gingrich, who's not this, 100% conservative, in my opinion, he's like a conservative globalist, but he's a brilliant man. And Newt Gingrich wrote an article for the prestigious but globalist institution, the Council on Foreign Relations. And in that article, Newt Gingrich pointed out that all of America's rights, like freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, and all these rights that we have, Newt Gingrich pointed out, are not worth anything. They're totally useless, and they're not worth anything unless, Gingrich wrote, we have the right to bear arms. Now, I never really thought about this to the depth that Gingrich understood this and explained it, and our founding fathers understood it. What Gingrich was saying was something profound and something we would easily let slip by with our mindset of today. Gingrich was saying is that none of your rights, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, and all these rights and protections we have. Gingrich was saying is that none of those rights and protections mean anything unless the people that have them have the means and the power to keep them and to protect them from various enemies who would come along and attempt to steal back those rights that the enemies of the people would attempt to steal away from them, their freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of the religion and so on and so forth. Gingrich said that unless we have our Second Amendment rights, which is the right to bear arms, the other rights are completely useless. Because if you don't have, this Gingrich wrote very eloquently, if you don't have the right to keep all of your other rights, if you don't have a means of defending them from those that would steal them, if you don't have the power necessary to keep and defend your rights and to protect your rights, Gingrich wrote, our founding fathers were painfully aware that the American people would soon lose all of those rights in the Bill of Rights and Constitution. The American people would soon lose all of those rights as soon as some kind of dictator or king or leader arose. And if the people allowed themselves through stupidity, Gingrich said, and historical ignorance, then a king or a leader or certain factions of the people would arise. And if the greater masses of Americans didn't have Second Amendment rights, like the right to own guns, then soldiers of a foreign king, soldiers from foreign armies, anti-American armed revolutionary factors inside the United States, armed gangs inside the United States, any of these groups and more could, just like in all the other nations of the world, come and take away the rights of the people, the constitutional rights of the people, like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure. All of those rights can be stolen back from the American people if any kind of enemy comes in, whether it rises up from within or it comes from a foreign nation. If this enemy has weapons and guns, then they will, history says, quickly enslave the patriotic Americans and quickly take all their rights away, and ultimately they will kill them or throw them in concentration camps because the people foolishly didn't protect their Second Amendment rights, and they have no means to defend themselves against a potential aggressor who is armed. Now, you know, intellectually I was aware of this, but until I read Gingrich's article, it was like the lights went on. Of course I was for all of these rights, including the Second Amendment rights. It's common sense. But it was the way Gingrich explained this, and this is something our founding fathers, they knew this. But it's like the lights went on when I realized the Second Amendment is not just, the right to bear arms is not just some right out there like other rights. It's the pivotal right because, you see, without power, and which is what the Second Amendment gives you, the right to own and possess power in the form of a gun. Without that power, you are weak and a victim to criminals, evil people, dictators, evil invaders from foreign nations or whatever. You're a total victim, and you can be enslaved and conquered quickly. The reason the militant communists and Adolf Hitler and the Nazis were able to take over their nations so quickly was because the communists who are operating in Russia, the Nazis who are operating in Germany, and in all these other nations, they as soon as they started to rise in power, the communists and the Nazis, etc., very subtly, very quickly, they began breaking into people's houses, farms, apartments, homes, and they did a massive check. And if anybody had a gun or guns and bullets, all of those guns and bullets were stolen from their owners. And the armies of the communists and the armies of Hitler then had all the weapons. So in a very short period of time, and this is before the advent of computer technology and profiling and stuff like that, they had to use paper, pencil, and shoeboxes to set up a filing system. Very shortly, these communist Nazi armies relatively quickly disarmed, for the most part, the populations of all these nations, like Russia and France and Germany, and on. Okay? And all of Russia was disarmed. So what that meant was, history tells us when we examine the facts, and by the way, I give the inside story about this whole thing, and most of you have never been exposed to the inside story. Some of you have, but most of you haven't. You need to read the expose I have in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, because it exposes this demonic strategy that keeps repeating in human history. So once these dictatorial soldiers of these Satan-possessed dictators like Hitler and Stalin and Lenin and Chairman Mao, etc., once they disarmed the people, and the people had no guns and bullets, then the people, when they began to violate all the rights they supposedly were given, let's never forget that Hitler was elected by popular election because he made promises. Let's never forget that even though the average working class man or woman or family in Russia did not want communism or socialism, and it was only like 4% of the population that did, they were seduced partially by the Santa Claus-like promises that always happen by communist revolutionaries. They use the same tactics wherever they go. They promise the working class and the middle class all these unrealistic gifts, which they have no intention of delivering on. They promise them the best free healthcare, the best free education, wonderful high-paying jobs for everybody. Everybody will have equal amounts of money. There'll be great, wonderful housing for everybody. There'll be no super rich. It'll all be divided equally. There'll be no, there will be true social justice, true redistribution of wealth. And it'll be so wonderful and so awesome that this communist or Nazi revolution will literally establish heaven on earth. And so just like in the United States today, you have tens of millions of people, as you do around the world, who are ignorant. Now, they may have a PhD from a college, but they're ignorant. They may have a master's or a BA, but they're ignorant. You have huge numbers of people in the U.S. and around the world who are historically ignorant, and they have no idea of what really happened in history. And what always happens, without exception, when socialism comes into power, it always produces communism and Marxism, without exception. It just takes a certain amount of time. And I document all this, and I explain all this in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. The reason the masses are seduced by socialism, communism, and Marxism is because it makes all these incredibly wonderful promises. And so people think that all this is going to happen. But the people are always betrayed, always. Every single time we've had a revolution like this, without exception, the people are betrayed. So we have all, well, I'll stay away from that. Because history repeats itself, but if you don't know history because you've been dumbed down, then you don't realize you're being conned and tricked. So once these dictators and their soldiers disarm the people then are defenseless. They have no way of defending themselves or protecting their rights or freedoms or anything else. They're like lambs to the slaughter. And so because the Germans were disarmed, the Jews were disarmed, and then you go into Russia and the peasants and the working class were disarmed. In the Communist Chinese Revolution, they were disarmed. In Cuba, they were disarmed. And today, we see the results of what happens every time the people are disarmed. So what happens is that the dictatorship governments, the police state, know the people can't defend themselves. So they freely march into their homes, their neighborhoods. They freely, with nothing, because they know the people can't resist. They oppress the people. They murder the people. They make the people slaves, or they send them to concentration camps, or line them up and machine gun them to death. They rape the women and the children, and sometimes the men. They steal all the monies of the people. And brutally, brutally oppress them. This is what happened to the Jews. And when we're talking about brutal oppression, you have to understand, you can't think like an American. when you have a nation that's gripped by this spirit of Antichrist, then absolutely anything is on the table. Anything can happen, no matter how evil, sadistic, and animal-like. And we have trouble really coming to terms with that in America, because no matter how challenging, we've had evils in America, but nothing comes close in America or American history. Nothing comes close to the unspeakable evils that have occurred in nations which don't even have a memory of Jesus, Christianity, the Bible, or right and wrong. So when the people have no way of defending themselves, these armies and these soldiers of these dictators march in and they steal all the possessions, the food, any wealth these people will have. As I said before, I'm not trying to be sensationalistic, I'm being accurate. The women and the children, and sometimes the men, are raped viciously, and I'll leave it at that, just operative word, vicious. They're beaten up, all their monies are taken, they're forced to work like slaves. The women are forced to be like sex slaves to these military. That happened in the past. It happened in Germany, it happened in Russia, it happened in Cuba, it happened in China. And then the people starve and the troops steal their food. And then they just slaughter by the millions. They slaughter the unarmed people who can't defend themselves. They take everything they have, life, liberty, and property. And then they send them to concentration camps or re-education camps where they are often killed. And then this evil spreads to other nations, other cities. And it spreads very, very fast. Why? Because strategically, these communist revolutionaries, and in the case of Nazi Germany, strategically and very quietly, they disarmed all the people of their guns and bullets and rifles and handguns and the means they had to defend themselves and defend their freedoms were quietly stolen and confiscated by these dictatorial forces. That's how it always works. You see, the initial phase is create a climate. No, the initial phase is use a form of psychological warfare, which is known, as you know, as PSYOPs. And PSYOPs is designed to brainwash either a foreign enemy, or if somebody determines arbitrarily that there's an internal enemy. The first, the weapon of preference is psyops, or psychological operations, also known as psychological warfare. And so when you look at what Hitler did, Hitler was popularly elected as the head of Germany. Hitler won because he wrote in his book, Mein Kampf, he had a deep understanding, Hitler did, of psychological warfare, psyops, and how you could use mind control and propaganda to control the people. And he knew this fact of history, which any military expert, any military scientist worth his or her salt, they know these principles. And one of the primary principles is, and Hitler openly wrote about this, is that people have a total, desperate, horrifying fear of being invaded by terrorists, or what terrorists could potentially do to the ordinary people if they infiltrated a nation. And Hitler made the comment that historically, this principle always applies, that the people of any nation, including Germany, and it would apply to the United States, Hitler said that the people of any nation would aggressively give up all of their rights and civil liberties, like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, etc. They would gladly give up their guns and their bullets. They would agree to any dictatorial command, because the dictatorial powers are promising to protect the people from terrorists, and the people have an irrational and desperate need to psychologically believe that they're being protected from terrorism. And so they're willing to give away absolutely everything they have and more in order to be protected. This is an historical principle about human nature, that in the need, the primal need for people to be taken care of, to be protected, they will give up all rights and means of defending themselves and money. They'll give up anything for it. So we have to understand that. And that principle has been exploited by dictators and evil governments across the world for thousands of years. So we need to understand that psychological warfare, or psyops, or psychological operations, one of the world's leading and top experts on psyops, or psychological warfare, one of the top experts in the world, bar none. I'm not going to mention his name for a variety of reasons, but he had read some of my articles, and I think he read one of my books. He read one of the books before A Prophecy of the Future of America, and he read a number of my interviews, which at that time, because they were not being rigged for censorship, they were reaching over 300, 400 million people total over like 10 years. Now that number's been slashed, and I no longer write for that particular medium. Not because that medium is not excellent, it is, but I know that big tech has been successful in rigging how many people will read it, and rigging the search engines and stuff. So I don't want to put my energy into something that can be victimized by Big Brother rigging, unless God gives me a plan to outrun, and then I'll do it. In any case, this man who was, first of all, many of you may know who he is. He was I believe he was the first openly proclaimed Satanist in the U.S. Army and the U.S. military. And he was a high, high level officer. But he was also, he openly admitted to being a member of the satanic religion. Number two is he was one of the world's and one of our military's most proficient and respected experts in the area of psyops or psychological warfare. And he had read my books because my books deal with subjects like scientific mind control, persuasion, propaganda, and things like that. And we communicated on numerous occasions. He received and read my book, A Prophecy of the Future of America. And his book, by the way, I believe the title was Mind Wars. And he essentially said in the opening of that book, I'm paraphrasing it, but what he said was that the most important thing in modern warfare is psyops or psychological operations. And the goal is to, without the use of conventional weapons like bullets and guns and bombs and stuff, without the use of conventional weapons, but through the proper usage of psychological weapons, the goal is to so absolutely convince your enemy that they have absolutely no hope whatsoever if they try to resist your military invasion, or if they are considering going to war against you. You have got to convince them to the level of their DNA that this is a fatal mistake and that there is absolutely no way possible that they could ever win or be victorious against the United States of America. And then you implant in their minds this, and you also implant in their minds the reasons why it's impossible for them to win. And he said the goal of psyops is to win the battle, to win the military battle in the psychological battlefield of the mind, to win that battle, to cause your enemy to surrender and retreat before even firing a shot. And thus he was talking about the primacy of psychological warfare. And I agree with him. And many military experts throughout the centuries said similar things. The primary battlefield is always, in any physical battle, the primary battlefield in all warfare is the psychological battlefield. If you can win the psychological war with psyops, psychological operations, then you have defeated your enemy. You have conquered your enemy without having to engage in any physical conflict whatsoever. And even if you are in a physical military conflict, it is the employment or use of psyops or psychological warfare that can make the difference between victory and defeat, even when the warfare is conventional physical warfare, because it's the attitude and the belief system that's happening in the hearts and minds of your soldiers, in the hearts and minds of your people and their leaders, which determine basically whether or not they have the inner spirit to win and prevail against the enemy. And anyone who knows anything about sports psychology and the training of Olympic athletes like swimmers and runners, or Michael Phelps in the swimming. Anyone who understands sports psychology and professional basketball, professional football, professional baseball, professional soccer, understands that having a mind that is self-programmed and not in a weird way, but having a mind that is self-programmed or programmed by a highly trained coach or trainer you can, in a sense, program your mind to excel, experience an enhanced level of performance athletically, and you can program your mind to win in football or baseball or basketball or golf or soccer, skateboarding or skiing. You can program your mind to win in business or in any other area. And this is not the new age. This is a serious mistake. People say, oh, that's the new age. No, it's not the new age. It's not the occult. It may have, since it's a worldly system, it may borrow ideas and principles from the occult and the new age. Yes. That's why we have to have a biblical worldview, because you may not have a choice. You may, through your business, it may be expected for you to attend a motivational seminar or a leadership seminar or whatever, and you're going to be exposed to all kinds of occultic principles and New Age principles, and you need to be able to recognize them, and then you need to know how to deal with them in order to be the man or woman God wants you to be. And you don't deal with them by freaking out hysterically. I'm using sarcasm. You don't win the battle by freaking out hysterically, shouting, this is of the devil, this is the new age, this is the occult. That's not how you win. That's how you lose, by the way. When you read, and I highly suggest this because I brought this up the other day, I wrote my books to be a complete systematic theological method of downloading in masses of people that the great truths of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, but not in a boring religious way, in a cutting edge way that would supernaturally equip God's people to be victorious. And so I've written all my books in a popular, fast-moving, hard-hitting, and entertaining, non-boring style. But nevertheless, when you add the books up, each book is like a separate volume in a major theological body of works called the Christian worldview. I think it would actually be superior to many of the people writing on a biblical worldview for this reason. They live two insulated lives. They're too academic. They only talk to fellow academics and professors, and therefore they may be brilliant people, but they've lost touch and lost the ability to connect and communicate to everyday people. Whereas I take the truths of the Bible, and I have spent my life refining and teaching myself by the grace of God how to connect with my verbal conversation and how to connect with my books to the average person. So I talk about movies and stuff, and it's fast moving. But what's happening is you're being downloaded with a powerful biblical worldview, which will make you a spiritually victorious warrior in the last days, which is what God wants. And unless you're equipped supernaturally for that level of ministry, God cannot fulfill his prophetic call on your life or America in the last days. That's how important it is. So I try to see my books, even though they're like popular style books, what they really are is volumes written by me, by the grace of God, the founder of Paradise Mountain Church and Paul McGuire Ministries. And they teach a biblical worldview. And it's the entire works by the founder and the builder of this biblical worldview, because it's my hope and desire that God's people will be equipped to fulfill what God has called them to do in the last days. So I write in a popular style. Now, this guy who was way up Well, he was an open Satanist. He was the former co-head of the Satanic Church in San Francisco. He was a very high-ranking intelligence officer in the NSA, National Security Agency. And he was one of the world's highest-ranking officers and experts in the area of psychological operations, or PSYOPs, or mind wars. And he read a number of my articles, and then he read my book, A Prophecy of the Future of America, and we communicated on a variety of subjects. And as I was saying earlier, he begins his book, his primary message is that physical warfare with traditional weapons is unnecessary, that if you implement psychological warfare or PSYOPs and you really know what you're doing, you can defeat your enemy very quickly without firing a shot. You can cause them to surrender, because what you're doing is you're persuading them or convincing them in their subconscious that it's absolutely hopeless for them to fight back, and the smartest thing they can do is to surrender. So any smart general or government would always prefer a military victory based on PSYOPs. Now, we talked back and forth. We obviously, he knew that I was a Bible-believing Christian, but a thinking one, and I knew that he was a Satanist. Now, the thing is, he said to me, do you actually believe, you know, this Bible stuff literally? And I mean, he was shocked that somebody who's intelligent, somebody who reads, somebody who thinks, actually believes in all these biblical stories literally, like Adam and Eve and all the rest. And I said, yes, I literally believe in all this. But I didn't laugh and I didn't apologize. And then he said stuff like he was disappointed in the Bible because it didn't deal, he said, sufficiently with prehistory. In other words, the history of what was happening before Adam and Eve came into being, the story of what was happening before the fall of man, and so on and so forth. And then we got into some very esoteric discussions. And let me just say this, okay? I am not in any way, shape, or form promoting him, apologizing for him, because when I did research into his life, there are some serious, and I have no idea if they're true or not, but some serious allegations have been made about him. If any of that is true, I mean, that is abhorrent to me, hideous to me, and I would oppose it with everything in me. But having said that, let's remember, and I'm not saying the man is a Nazi because I really don't know the truth regarding some of these things, these allegations. Only because I don't have the time to research every area. But the point was that he had the respect of the head of the NSA and everything else. And military-industrial complex, many different branches of it, like naval intelligence, like the NSA, like DARPA, many different branches of our intelligence complex is very savvy and developing all kinds of scientific, biological, quantum physics, artificial intelligence. I mean, these we now live in a military of the future. This is a science fiction military, except it's happening now. Robert Heinlein, who was one of my favorite authors when I was a kid, and he was one of the greatest science fiction writers of all time, Robert Heinlein. He wrote Stranger in a Strange Land. And his life was stranger than his science fiction novels. As I've shared with you before, when I moved to Hollywood and I was living up in the Hollywood Hills with my wife, and I lived on Lookout Mountain Avenue, which is a famous street, which is right off of Laurel Canyon. So I lived up in Laurel Canyon and Lookout Mountain Avenue. What I didn't know at the time when I lived on Lookout Mountain Avenue, and everybody, well, Madonna lived way, way up the street in a castle. We had a modest, like, ski house home, but emphasize modest. But it's a great neighborhood that we had a modest house, but everybody around us were like princesses and princesses. They had like estates and, you know. So the point was, though, that the street that I lived down, Lookout Mountain Avenue, I didn't know about it at the time. And I wrote my first book or two while living up there. And it was my first book or two had to do with how God supernaturally delivered me from the New Age, the occult, and the supernatural. Because remember, my major at the University of Missouri was Altered States of Consciousness and Filmmaking. So I'm writing my book and stuff, and it deals with heavy-duty stuff. But I didn't know at that time, this goes back like three decades, I didn't know at the time I lived there, Timothy Leary lived down the street. And right from our house on Lookout Mountain Avenue, it was just about three-quarters of a block up Lookout Mountain Avenue that the house of Robert Heinlein, the great science fiction writer, lived. Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer, lived there for a while. L. Ron Hubbard, the science fiction writer and founder of Scientology, lived there. And then, like, endless numbers of 1970s, 1980s superstar rock and roll singers and rock and roll bands lived there, and writers lived there. It was a very eclectic place. And what was weird is that Aldous Huxley lived there in 1936, and all these heavy-hitting occult writers and science fiction writers, they lived like a stone's throw away from my house. And then I found this out after I moved out of there. And then I found out I had seen this place once hiking up the street, because this street was very narrow, and you'd have like huge limousines roaring up the street, up the mountain, you know, going like 60 miles an hour. And it would be Jerry Brown. I guess it was then Governor Jerry Brown. His limousine driver was pedal to the metal flying up Lookout Mountain Avenue because he was on his way to the top to visit Madonna in her castle. That was the kind of place this was. It was weird. So then I discovered that many of these pivotal figures live there, like Aldous Huxley in 1936, who wrote Brave New World and conceived the scientific dictatorship. And then there was what was called the Laurel Canyon Laboratory. I didn't know that when I lived there. I saw it hiking. I saw it looking through, it was concealed, looking through some bushes and stuff. And I thought it was like a cult compound because it was so weird. What it really was, it was a mind control, and they say, allegedly, an MK Ultra mind control laboratory and a propaganda laboratory. And it's been written about quite a bit. Now, as to what really went on there and how much is rumor and how much is fact, I don't know. I was never in that laboratory, thank God. And I can't tell you the difference between the rumors, the truth, and the fiction. I'm just telling you what people said happened there. Also, Charles Manson hung around there. The Beach Boys, if you kept going up high on Lookout Mountain Avenue, the Beach Boys lived there in a giant mansion. The Manson family, Charles Manson, would visit. And then you could take this winding road. I just found this out recently. You could take this winding road from Lookout Mountain, Laurel Canyon, and you keep going miles and miles through this winding road of going through small city streets and mountainous ways. And the next thing you know, there's like a magical mystery ride, winding road, from where the Manson families murdered Sharon Tate, okay, to Charles Manson's family hangout, which was like in a the Spahn Movie Ranch, where they would shoot old movies. And the Manson family and his cult would hang out there. But then the Manson family and his cult would hang in the whole vast network of underground caves that are behind his hideout. And when I was doing research for the greatest battle for the hearts and minds of mankind in the history of the world, as well as research and the book Conquering the Matrix, Mass Awakening, A Prophecy of the Future of America, and on, because in each book I deal with a huge chunk of the puzzle piece. I open up a huge bracket in the matrix, if you will, to explain what is happening not only in the world of Hollywood communications, propaganda, virtual reality, psychedelic drugs, consciousness, the supernatural, the hive mind, and the intellectuals and globalist leaders like Aldous Huxley and H.G. Wells, who led mankind into where we are now. And you see, you need to, in order to have a biblical worldview, you have to really understand the whole thrust of what's happening. Otherwise, you're incompetent. It's like you're not trained to be an ambassador for Christ. You're not trained to do the mission God called you to do. Every one of us needs to be trained to do the mission that God called us to do. And that means we have to participate in it by studying, reading, learning. If we're satisfied and walking around like autopilot, you know, the prophet Daniel said that in the last days, men would fly to and fro all around the world. He was speaking of commercial jet travel. The apostle Daniel said in the last days that knowledge and wisdom would vastly increase. And he meant, the prophet Daniel not only meant that wisdom and revelation of God's prophetic word, like the book of Revelation, would increase in the last days. But when the prophet Daniel was talking about wisdom and knowledge increasing in the last days, he was saying that for the ordinary man, for every society, but for the ordinary man and woman, their knowledge of science and technology and biology and just about any subject would just skyrocket through the roof. Because knowledge would be increasing so rapidly and accelerating so rapidly. And I want to say this here. This is a critical point. If you're a parent, a grandparent, a minister, a pastor, somebody who wants to be in the ministry, or just an ordinary Christian, this is a very, very important biblical concept. And that is this. There are secular people, militant secular humanists. There are militant atheists. There are Satanists. There are Luciferians. There are witches. There are atheists. And there's a broad spectrum of people. And a disturbingly high percentage of them perceive themselves as waging some kind of spiritual war against the Bible, the God of the Bible, and Christianity. In fact, they want to destroy it. They want to obliterate it completely. If you don't think so, then the evil one has blinded your eyes spiritually. A woman who is a very vital part of this ministry, Paradise Mountain Church, I don't want to give her name because I didn't get permission, and I hope she's listening now. You know who you are. You know how thankful I am for you. And I'm just going to call you Jay, okay? And if those of you know Jay, then tell her I was talking about her. Anyway, she was sending me a bunch of, as she always does, she sends me news links and all kinds of things, critical information, because she's a heavy-duty researcher herself. And I knew about this because I did a whole bunch of radio programs and wrote articles on this and warned about this in a number of my books. And that was Many, you can go to the Paul McGuire Report archives and hear the programming I did on this. And that was, I was warning parents and Christians, etc., about what was called the comprehensive sex educational programs that were coming and had already come in many states in the United States, including trial runs in many states, including California. And so this Christian woman who's an excellent researcher and steadfast volunteer with our ministry, and I thank God for her, she sent me the latest updates about how the state of California had become aggressively implementing, with the help of the ACLU, implementing these, for lack of better words, hardcore, comprehensive sexual education curriculum. That is, that the children, really young, okay, really young, starting really, really young, and going all the way through high school and into college. But it start, the point is, it starts very young. So I had researched this. I realized who's behind it. So I'm going to talk basically in a, like a journalistic communication style. But because of the topic, in order for me to effectively communicate to parents and grandparents and leaders and stuff, the level of what I perceive to be a threat, I'm going to have to use some specific words and names that reflect sexual content and is not appropriate for teenagers, preteens, or if you're the parent or grandparent or authority figure in the room, this will be inappropriate material. Even though your children are going to be watching visuals of it, hearing audio of it, and will be exposed to a far, 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 far more explicit description than the one I'm about to give, starting in at I forgot what age it was, starting in like it said five. That's not fifth grade, because I know for a fact it starts way earlier than fifth grade. So I don't know how old. Are kids in kindergarten at 5 years old? It's just, so it starts in kindergarten. So however old a kindergartner is, because I forgot, even though I'm the father of three adult kids, I forgot how old you are when you're in kindergarten. And then it's explicitly sexual in kindergarten, where it starts, and then it ramps up. When I say it ramps up, it accelerates into I'm going to count to 10 as we get into the objectionable subject matter. So I encourage you to not have young children or people that would be offended by this in the room. So I'm going to give you a count of 10 to take care of that. And then when I end the objectionable material, I'll give you another count of 10 before I go back to regular discourse. Okay, so here it is. Here's the count to 10. This is your heads up and warning that there's objectionable material coming. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, this is for mature adult ears only. Okay, comprehensive sex education. This is a global plan. It's more than just, you know, people are very upset about what's happening in California and across the country. They should be. But it's important to understand that this is a global plan that has been launched by the globalists for the primary agenda of shattering the traditional nuclear family, okay, and driving people into isolated individuality. You've got to get that or you're not going to understand what's really happening. Now, these concepts they go back to Plato. But Aldous Huxley talked about it in detail in his book, Brave New World. He talked about a scientific dictatorship where there wouldn't be mothers and fathers, there would be no more families, and the state would program and raise children, and people would be genetically bred to be like slaves, to be like lower-level managers, middle-level managers, and then more higher-level people. And you would be genetically engineered to either be like an alpha, a beta, a delta, a theta, et cetera, et cetera. And you could not escape your genetic engineering. You would also be programmed with scientific mind control, psychedelic drugs, electronics, to never question your fate in life. And you would be under the rule of a scientific dictatorship. However, you would never know you were under the rule of a scientific dictatorship. You would be like perpetually happy because they would make it mandatory for everybody who lived in the scientific dictatorship to take a psychedelic drug called Soma, where everybody's like blissful, happy, and at peace. Well, that wasn't just, a sci-fi novel. That he was expressing openly the game plan of the intellectuals and the scientists who are part of the global elite, and what this new world order is really going to look like when it's finished. So when the United Nations Agenda 2030 is really finished, it's going to look like parts of this Brave New World that Huxley wrote about. It's also important to understand that Aldous Huxley's brother was Julius Huxley. Julius Huxley became the head of the United Nations super division called UNESCO. It's the job of UNESCO at the United Nations to create a single world curriculum so that all students in every nation on planet Earth is receiving the same learning and content. And especially when it comes to areas of social programming and conditioning. So that means that comprehensive sexual education under the guidance of UNESCO, it's going to be taught the same way in every nation in planet Earth when they roll it out. Common Core came out of the United Nations. It's not to make you smarter, it's to dumb down your kids so they'll be compliant and non-thinking. It's essential for Christians to get up to speed on this. There are people in the Church of Scientology, not all of them, but many of them. When you read their articles and listen to their talks, and I don't recommend you doing that unless you're very mature in the Lord, because I'd hate to see you get deceived because you didn't have a strong enough biblical worldview. But a lot of them who write and speak are so, so far ahead than your typical evangelical Christian. They know the dangers of using mind control on the human mind. They know the dangers of certain psychiatric drugs. And they know the dangers of like genetically modified foods. In other words, I don't agree with their doctrine. I don't agree with their theology. Okay, there's no way L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology and former sci-fi writer, can save your soul. Only Jesus can save your soul. So I don't agree with them and stuff like that. But that doesn't mean they aren't trying to expose truth in many areas. Like they picked up the torch and they have been promoting the exposés on the horrors of Nazi MKUltra mind control. Christian churches should be doing that. You say, why? Because if your eyes are open and you really know what's going on, the victims of things like the CIA's clandestine program, MKUltra mind control, the victims, which consists, nobody knows whether it was 50,000 or 400,000 young people. Nobody has the exact number. But massive numbers of young people were mysteriously abducted from the streets of cities and towns all across America, and many of them were brought into these secret mind control laboratories that were being run by the Nazi mind control scientists that came here in 1947 under Operation Paperclip. And they were using these Nazi mind control scientists using a process called pain, drugs, and hypnosis, and LSD. They were shattering the personalities of young children in the process to program them and brainwash them. And then after they would shatter the personalities, they would put them back together and give them hypnotic command words, hypnotic identities to carry out missions, etc. You say, you don't believe that. Well, the only reason you wouldn't believe it is because you haven't done any homework. I guarantee you, if you did some homework and read the documentation, you would know that everything I just said is absolutely true. In fact, again, looking at the books I've written, they're designed to be like a download of volumes in a highly contemporary manner that will equip you to be victorious in your own life, but to be victorious in the call that God has for you. And so in numerous books, I felt led by the Holy Spirit. In fact, it was the Holy Spirit that led me to uncover the dark secrets of MKUltra mind control. So in my books, I go into depth exposing it, how it originated with the Nazis. And I give you information that you won't find anywhere else. A lot of people have used my material and put it in their own books. You know, somebody sent me a message today, and they sent me a number of messages. Let's just put it this way. The messages are quotes from a highly, highly well-known, most of you would know who this person is. These quotes that I've been sent come from a very highly well-known communicator, activist, or whatever, who goes by a pseudonym, which is one letter in the alphabet. Now, I'm not passing commentary on that individual because I haven't personally had enough time to research that individual. I'm just too busy. But I've had people approach me, and so this is not an endorsement or a condemnation of that individual, but I've had a number of people come up to me or staff members of Paradise Mountain Church and tell me that this individual regularly uses my words, my writing, my books, my teachings, he uses in his messages. And, you know, a lot of people do that all the time on websites and books. And you know, and that's okay, I guess, because the message gets out. But, you know, out of courtesy, you ought to make a reference to your source. That way people can hear the rest of the message of our ministry, which is about Jesus. Anyway, this individual, which many of you would know because they go by one letter in the alphabet, I was reading quotes that they sent me, and it was like word for word, idea for idea, what I've been saying on the Paul McGuire Report, what I've been saying on my videos, and what I've been saying in my books and articles. And it's not just a similarity. The parts of the message that I've read are really a copying of the key arguments that I've developed, the key research that I've developed, and the key message I've developed. That's called, by the way, in Hollywood, your signature. Anyone who is a Hollywood screenplay writer or a musician or an actor or in some kind of creative business, there's an expression in Hollywood calling that's your signature. And that means, like a writer like me, every writer has a signature. They have And the person who knows the writer's signature the most is the writer, him or herself. And that is just the unique way you string together words, the kinds of words you use, the pattern, the emotion, that all encompasses your signature. And I can glance at writing and in like 30 seconds, I can tell whether somebody has been spending hours reading my material, et cetera, and is kind of like using as their own versus somebody who just kind of poked their heads into the same general territory of research as me. Because, you see, I see my signature all over what they wrote. And that's only the author really understands the signature. It's the very unique words that I use that other people don't use. It's the topics that I cover that nobody covers. And there's an exceptionalism to it. And so the person sending me this was basically saying, this is you, Paul, word for word. And then we heard from this person's organization that they use my material quite a bit. Now, again, I'm not saying anything about the individual because, and this is not meant to be disparaging or as an insult to the individual. I simply don't have time. So I don't want to make a comment. The other thing is that I have people come to me and tell me that this is the case. But my purpose in bringing it up is this idea of signature. A director, for example, like if you watch Spielberg films carefully, as a director, he uses certain techniques and he'll use them over and over again in his other movies. The same with Martin Scorsese. He uses certain techniques. That's his signature. And you'll see them in other movies. So when you see another director imitating or trying to imitate Scorsese or Spielberg or whoever, you will often see another director imitate some of those techniques, but most often they don't imitate them properly, or they kind of half imitate them and then depart, and it becomes awkward. It would be better, the person who's directing would be smarter just to use his or her own unique stuff instead of trying to have a hybrid of the thing. But the point is, you know, unless my work is copyrighted, I write my articles and because my goal is to spread the message of Christ, I encourage people to use my articles and spread them far and wide in social media. But I do require that you have the integrity to list my name in the appropriate place as the author of the article, which I am, and make a copyright notice that it's under copyright. As long as you're not doing that to make a profit off of what I've written, or you're not twisting what I'm saying, and you give me and this ministry the appropriate credit so people can find out everything we're saying, I'm fine with it. And that's why, until they started rigging the internet hardcore, when you would type in the name Paul McGuire, there was something like 291 million or higher hits or watches to the name Paul McGuire. 291 million. What percentage of that was me, Paul McGuire? I don't know. A significant percentage, only because of what I do. But if you type in the name Paul McGuire today, you will see a massive drop, a drop by millions. It's still a large number, but it's like 1 million versus 200 million. And that's not just true of me. That's true of everybody I know who has a ministry or who's a Christian author or a conservative point of view or a biblical point of view. Anyone who is, quote, not politically correct is being systematically marginalized by big tech, and this is their way of trying to bring you down. So they're lying about the numbers, but what is essential, and the only way we can break their plot, and that's what it is, at Orwellian Big Brother tyranny and censorship, the only way we can break their stranglehold is to do an end run around their control system, which is the search engines that are hardcore rigged. And when you see articles and people that you believe are telling the truth, that have Christian messages, etc., that are trying to do things for God, I can't emphasize to you how important it is for you to spread that person's link far and wide to your social media groups and friends. Because when you do that, you're taking the power out of the hands of a search engine, which is a bot that's been programmed to censor Christianity. You're taking the power out of the hands of an evil bot, and you're putting the power to spread the message far and wide into your hands and encouraging your friends to do it. See, that way, we can do an end run around their censorship. Because if you're analyzing how are they controlling the internet, they're controlling the internet by burying tens of thousands of very smart, conservative, Christian, Bible prophecy, truth-telling people and Christians. It used to be you could just type in a subject or a name. And, for example, Paul McGuire. Okay, and I'm not saying this because I have an egocentric mania. It's just I'm familiar with it. So if you type in Paul McGuire, all of this started in 2016 with the Trump thing. It all started in 2016. So prior to that, if you typed in the name Paul McGuire, not only would you see like 291 million or higher watches and sources, you would just type in the name Paul McGuire, and you could go 200 pages, and I wouldn't go further than that, I'm too busy, 200 pages deep, starting at page one, you would see the name Paul McGuire multiple times in reference to multiple articles that had to do with prophecy, the supernatural, the Bible, things like that. You could easily go 200 pages deep. And whenever you would research stuff, my name, my articles would pop up. That's when the internet was not being censored and ruled by bullies. The same would be true of a lot of people that you know and like. You listen to their podcasts, you read their articles, you listen to their radio shows. Huge numbers of those people also had hundreds of millions of watches and hits. And if you typed in their name prior to 2016, you know, you'd see 100 pages of quotes from them, articles on them, et cetera, et cetera. Now they become more and more evil because they're more and more scared. Now, not only will you try to type in the name of a ministry, a group, an organization, or a publication, like you type in the exact thing, like whatever.com or whatever.org, or the person's name and the topic or the subject. That's a no-brainer. With all that information, if that search engine wasn't rigged, it would take you to the beginning of 1,000 pages at least of articles involving that individual and that particular like topic, like let's say it's bird flu, the videos, all the social media that person has, and to thousands of articles in the different publications he or she has published. Okay? It would just happen. But since 2016, now you type in all that specific information, like whatever the name of the organization is, .org, .com, .us. You type in the person's name, the key spokesperson. You type in the article. And you normally would have had thousands of pages and images and videos available for you to peruse. Now, nothing happens. It's like that person doesn't exist. But the reality is, from a factual, truthful standpoint, the reality is, in the internet, that individual, that organization that they have, the content of those articles, as a matter of fact, still has tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of pages and articles and information and pictures. They're still there. It's just that they've used their search engines to make them disappear. And what this is full-on psychological operations, or psyops. And this is the essence of the strategy. In psyops, you got to convince your enemy to, you know, you're overwhelmed, you can't win, retreat. Okay? What they're trying to do is rig the internet in such a way that unless you have the right politically correct beliefs, and you certainly can't be a Christian, you can't have a biblical worldview, you can't believe in Bible prophecy, you can't have conservative beliefs. Because if you do have those Christian conservative beliefs, they'll bury you in cyberspace. If you are pro-climate change, if you have all the politically correct things you're in favor of, if you're talking about the liberal message, and you hit all the right buttons, they will promote you. Your name will be everywhere. You see, it's rigging. It's rigging. Why? Because it's essential that you really choose to partner with me and help me and bond with me and be my real brother and sister in the Lord on this. I mean, I'm really serious. And this is not for me. This is for us and for the other people speaking out and the other organizations and writers and ministers, etc. Help me and partner with me in making that a reality. Become a prayer warrior. Become a person who sends out our links. Become someone who is willing to finance the kingdom of heaven being spread on this earth with your donations and financial contributions to this ministry. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us. God bless you and spread this far and wide.